Good evening. Thank you all for coming. And again, I want to start by thanking the JCC for hosting and partnering with Links for the General Links program and specifically this class. Now, did everybody here watch the dog video? Did anybody watch the dog video? Okay, so I emailed some people who I had, you know, on my quick list, a video of basically, it's 45 seconds, the rabbi's blowing the shofar, it's a demonstration, it's outdoors, and a dog appears in the background in the middle of the shofar blowing and starts basically mimicking, you know, with barking the, like a wolf almost, the shofar sound. And I challenged everyone to try to think of how I'm going to connect that into my class. And when you figure that out, let me know, because I still have 20 minutes to figure that out. So hopefully we'll be able to tie that in somehow. Okay, but at least it got some people here, so that was the point. Now, we all agree, here's a shofar, by the way, it's a ram's horn, it works, I'll try to blow it later, although I'm no expert. And this is basically the symbol of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. Apple and honey people associate with, but really, you know, at the end of the day, the shofar is the main prop, the main symbol of Rosh Hashanah. It's usually from a ram's horn, it could be from certain other animals, and it's blown in the synagogue during the morning services on Rosh Hashanah. We'll talk about, you know, what it sounds like, what the specific blasts are a little later on. But it's clearly a central part of the service of Rosh Hashanah, and what I want to try to do today is at least gain a perspective on what is the message, what is the signal that the shofar is sending to us, what is it supposed to be telling us. So last week we spoke about how Rosh Hashanah is also the anniversary of the creation of man and woman, the day that we were created, and therefore every Rosh Hashanah, in a way, we have an opportunity to recreate ourselves as new people, to bring about changing our lives. And we mentioned the word Shana, which means year, new year. Shana is related to the word Shinui, which also means change. And it's an opportunity to make a change in our life. So where does the shofar fit in? So if we look at our sheet for a second, let's take a look at some of the contexts in which we find the shofar besides for Rosh Hashanah. So the first quote on there actually talks about the holiday of Rosh Hashanah in the seventh month. You're going to say, oh, it's the first month. It's the first month of the year. But there are two ways to count the Jewish months. One of them is from Nisan. That's the first month in terms of counting the holidays. It's a discussion for another time why there are two first months. But in the Torah, in the Bible itself, there are it always refers to Nisan as the first month, and therefore the month of Tishrei, which is when Rosh Hashanah falls out, is the seventh month. So in the seventh month, on the first of the month, there shall be a holy convocation for you, a gathering. You shall not do laborious work. It's like a Sabbath day, and it shall be a day of shofar sounding for you. And that's where we derive the mitzvah, the commandment, to blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Now, another place where the shofar appears in the Torah is in Exodus 19:16. That is when it talks about the giving of the Torah, the receiving of the Torah at Sinai. It says there, it was a great show. God revealed himself to the people at Sinai when he gave us the Torah. And there it describes how the sound of the shofar was very strong. And that's another mention of the shofar. There was in the background, besides for thunder and lightning, all, you know, this whole loud show going on, there was also the sound of the shofar, the giving of the Torah. And then again, in Isaiah, there are other places, by the way, where it mentions it, but I'm just bringing out a couple of them. In Isaiah, when it talks about the ultimate redemption at the end of days, when the Messiah comes, it says that on that day, a great shofar will be blown, and then will come those lost in the land of Assyria and those cast away in the land of Egypt, which basically those in exile, those outside of Israel, will be gathered in to serve God once again on the Temple Mount with the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. And the announcement, the heralding of that great event will be with the sound of the shofar. So we have the giving of the Torah, the sound of the shofar. We have the time of Mashiach, the time of the Messiah, the sound of the shofar. And hopefully we could try to connect those two things in some way and as well connect them to the blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So if we look at the next source, Maimonides. So Maimonides, the Rambam, gives us an explanation for why we are blowing the shofar. What is the message of the shofar? And he says, even though the sounding of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah is a decree, meaning it's a commandment in the Torah, it doesn't say what the reason is, but we're going to do it whether we know the reason or not, but it contains an allusion. There's at least an idea that he can suggest into what it's trying to do. What is the purpose of this sound? And he says, it is as if it is saying, wake up, you sleepy ones, from your sleep, and you who slumber, arise, inspect your deeds, repent, remember your Creator. Those who forget the truth and the vanities of time and devote their energies throughout the entire year to vanity and emptiness, which will not benefit or save, look to your souls, improve your ways and your deeds. So the shofar is a calling to for self-inspection, introspection, examine your ways. Are we really doing as best as we could, exactly what we could be doing? That's the call of the shofar, says the Rambam. It means wake up from your slumber. We kind of go into autopilot in our life, and we lose focus, and we just run from one thing to the next without stopping to think. And the shofar says, wake up, stop a second, and think about your life. Think about the direction that your life is taking. Is this the best direction for you? That's what the Rambam Maimonides says is the message of the shofar. So I want to try to understand that a little bit more. Why is it with the shofar? Why, how does it wake us up in this way? So there is a rabbi in the Silver Spring area, Rabbi Aaron Lopiansky. He is the dean of the yeshiva of Greater Washington in Silver Spring. And he is a great Torah scholar, as well as he sort of specializes in Jewish thought, the more of the conceptual understanding behind mitzvot and different Jewish ideas. So I read this in the following section of this discussion in an essay by Rabbi Lapiansky, and I found it fascinating and meaningful. So if we look at the next source, the last one on the first page, so this is an excerpt from the weekday Amidah prayer, which is said three times a day. Really, actually, it's an excerpt from every day, actually. This part is in the Shmona Esrei, the Amidah, every single day. And it's in the second blessing. And it says there, a list. This blessing is a praise of God, describing God's might. And we say there that God sustains the living with kindness. He resuscitates the dead with abundant mercy, supports the fallen, heals the sick, releases the confined. And we have a list of things describing God's might. And if you look at the list, so all of the things seem to be great acts of might, things beyond human capability, sustains the living, resuscitates the dead, supports the fallen, heals the sick. It's not something that a human can do on their own. But the last one, releases the confined, seems very basic. If you have the key, then you can release, if you untie someone, anyone can release someone who is confined. Not such a great act. So how is that a praise of God? What exactly are we saying when we praise God, you release the confined? So there are numerous interpretations of this, but Rabbi Lapiansky explained it as follows. Each of us is born into a circumscribed world. The time period that we're born into, the society that we're born into, the community, the family, and then with our choices, we further confine ourselves to certain circles of life. So we choose who we spend time with, our social connections, we choose a spouse, we choose where we live, we choose our spiritual guides. We make many choices that will affect our life and affect our perspective on the world. And by nature, this is just a fact, every choice that we make and the circumstances that we're born into and the circumstances that we end up in will on the one hand, open some doors and open us to certain ideas and new ideas. And on the other hand, they will limit us. They'll confine us. We're basically limited to the situation that we find ourselves in. And it's just a fact. For better or for worse, everyone is confined and limited to the circles in which they find themselves, either by nature, by what they're born into, as well as by the choices that they make in life. And in a way, sometimes they will limit our perspective, they'll preclude us from striving to certain heights, and it's just, again, it's a fact. It's not necessarily something that we have, sometimes we have control of that, but I'm not necessarily even talking about a decision that's necessarily a bad decision or a wrong decision. It could be the right decision and the right people to be with and the right person to be with and the right place to work and all the right decisions. But even that, by definition, is still going to create certain limitations, because if we were somewhere else, then things would be different and we would be introduced to other ideas and new things. And by definition, we are limited to the world that we find ourselves in. So he says that's what we're referring to when we say that God frees us, releases the confined. That there's an idea that, it's a Talmudic idea, that a person can't free themselves from their own imprisonment. Meaning, not from their own imprisonment, but an imprisoned person can't free themselves. You need someone to come from outside to let you go. Now, of course, it's happened. The person can break out, but if they're truly imprisoned, then they won't be able to get out. And you always need an outside force to come and free us from the confines that of a prison or of the confines, these limitations in life that we find ourselves in. And so that external force that we need is a divine intervention. That's what we're referring to in this blessing, that God releases the confined, that through divine intervention, God will open the door to new perspectives, new ideas, new opinions, and we can be free from the limitations that we find ourselves in our life. Now, how does this work? What is the medium that God uses to do this? So Rabbi Lopiansky said that the medium is sound. Why is that? So, interestingly, the Talmud has an interesting idea about our ability to hear. So the Talmud points out that our ability to hear, all of our senses really, can bring us to sin. Specifically, our hearing, what the Talmud refers to is we can hear things that are inappropriate, lashon hara, improper speech, gossip, slander. We can hear, and if we listen to that and we believe it, then we ourselves are partaking in that sin. If we join discussions of lewdness, so that, Talmud says, is a sin that we can perform through our ears. However, says the Talmud, but we were also created with a great solution to that, which is two fingers like pegs that we can use to close our ears. Two lobes, we have the ability to block out sound. But the question that comes up then is, why isn't it that we need a solution to block out sound, to close our ears, so why weren't we created with a built-in system like we have for our eyes? We have eyelids, close our eyes. We have lips to close our mouth, to keep sound out. Why is it that when it comes to our ears, we don't have a built-in system for closing our ears? And the answer is because we need our ears to be open at all times, to be able to receive sound from the outside. If a person is sleeping, right, on a physical level, if a person's sleeping, so, and there's an emergency, the only thing that's going to bring them out of their slumber is sound, as far as I know. Touch, but that's already something very close. But I don't think a person smells in their sleep, as far as I know. Not that I could be wrong. But a person definitely doesn't see in their sleep. The way that we are brought out of our slumber, there's a baby crying, you know, or there's an emergency, and there's an alarm that goes off, is through our ability to hear. That's what wakes us from our slumber. In the same way, you know, on a spiritual level, it's through sound that we are awakened from our spiritual slumber. No matter how spiritually asleep we are, how out of tune we might be, but the sound is the medium through which God reaches to us, and we're always open to communication from the outside world through our ability to hear. It's interesting to know also that sound is the only way that there's actually the only sense in which the outside force is actively communicating with you. Meaning, when you touch something, so that sense, that which you are touching and sensing isn't active. When you taste something, when you smell something, it's not active. When you see something, so there's light bouncing off it, but what you see is stationary. It's only sound that there's something moving and creating vibrations, creating sound waves that is communicating with you. So that's the sound is the best way for the outside to communicate to us and wake us from our slumber, and that's true on a spiritual level as well. So the way that we receive a call from the outside, you know, from outside of our confines, from outside of our of the limitations that we by definition have in our life, is through the medium of sound. And that is where the shofar comes in. So the shofar was blown at the time that the Torah was given at Sinai. The Torah is something from a spiritual world. It's God's word. It comes from beyond this world, and it communicates with us in this physical world. In a similar way, it will be blown at the end of days, and then it will be that which again it frees us. It will be freeing us from the confines of this world at the end of days, when we no longer have an inclination towards evil. Those urges, those inner urges, desires, which are natural, which create the ability for us to be tested in this world, at the end of days, the coming of the Mashiach, so that will be brought to an end, and the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, which again, as I mentioned last week, isn't the little guy on our shoulder, you know, it's saying, do evil, do evil. It's just a natural inner urge or desires that we're created with that will us, that tempt us to choose our own needs over others, choose our own needs over our own desires over serving God. That's what it is. And at the end of days, that will be taken away. We'll be freed from the confines of that temptation. And that, again, happens with the sound of the shofar. The giving of the Torah is heralded with the sound of the shofar because there's an outside force being brought into the world, an outside message entering the world to speak to us. And also, at the time of the Mashiach, at the time of the Messiah, at the end of days, so there will be a shofar blast to, again, free us from the confines, from the limitations that we have in this world, and bring us to a level where we will no longer have those limitations. And so too, on Rosh Hashanah, that is what the sound of the shofar represents for us. It's this wake-up call. It is the message from the outside coming from beyond, from coming and urging us to move beyond the limitations that exist in our life. Wake up and introduces us, again, it's like a divine intervention, but introduces us to new ideas and gets us ready for true change to recreate ourselves on the day of Rosh Hashanah. So that's Rabbi Lopiansky's idea of how the shofar blast is what awakens us. It's through the medium of sound that we, just as we awake from a physical slumber through sound, so we awake from a spiritual slumber. The message from outside, you know, that draws us out of the confines is through the medium of sound, which is represented in numerous events in our history and each year on Rosh Hashanah through the sound of the shofar. Now, the dog video. So how am I going to connect the dog video? So as soon as I saw this video, actually, it struck me that there is a connection. And it's an idea that I saw in one place, an idea put forth by Rev Shmuel of Sachachov. He was a Hasidic Rebbe, lived in the early 20th century, late 19th century, early 20th century. And he, in one of his discussions about the shofar, points out that the shofar actually does have this animal-like sound. And the question is why? What is that representing? So he says that although in general we try not to, you know, the Torah and the works of the sages, they generally encourage us to not act in an animalistic way. An animal follows, you know, its natural urges, and we are always trying to overcome those and apply self-control and put others before us. But there's one exception to that. There's one way in which mimicking or following in the way of an animal is actually praised in the Talmud, and that is that a animal, a trained animal at least, listens and trusts the wisdom of its master. And in that way, we are supposed to trust and trust in the wisdom of God. And sometimes, again, we're born into certain circumstances. We're born into a certain society, and we're born in and through life we have certain mentors and teachers and associates, and all of those things influence us to arrive at certain conclusions and certain assumptions and certain opinions. And the shofar blast represents this idea that even if we've arrived at a certain assumption, a certain conclusion, that, again, is based on the limitations that we've naturally created for ourselves or have been born into, which sometimes we have to just trust the wisdom of God above our own wisdom. And it takes humility to do that, to say, I really think one thing, but maybe if God's telling me something else, then I should listen to God. And that is the message of the shofar, one message of the shofar, that where we move beyond our limitations, but it's through the sound of the animal, that just as the animal follows the wisdom of its master, so too the shofar says brings out our humility to follow in the wisdom of God. So now I brought the shofar because I want to, I've been practicing this week because I was never very good at blowing the shofar, and this week I've improved by practice. So now I see that I just had to practice, so hopefully I'll be able to do it now. But if you turn the page, so there are three shofar blasts. The echo in here might make it really loud. So the first blast is one long blast. And then there are three short blasts, which are the shvarim. And then the hardest one, which I'm not very good at yet, is the trua, which is nine very short blasts. Okay. Thank you. So there are many, many interpretations of what the different blasts represent. And with the time remaining, I want to share just one idea that I heard from a local rabbi, a young rabbi who passed away recently, but he was a teacher in the community. His name was Rabbi Sandberg, and he gave a class, which I heard the recording of, and he had the following suggestion of what the message of the different shofar blasts were. And he said that the long blast represents long-term goals, that it reminds us to set goals for ourselves, to dream of where we can reach, what spiritual heights we can reach in our lives. But then we blow short blasts, different, either three short blasts or the nine very short blasts, and that represents how we're going to reach the goals. We're not going to reach it by just trying to jump all the way to the end. The way that we reach those goals is in short baby steps. Everyone at a different pace. Some people, it's like 3 medium steps. For some people, it's these very, very, very short steps. Everyone has to reach that goal in their own way. That's what's represented by the medium blasts and the short blast. And at the end, though, so I didn't mention this, but normally every set has a long blast, then either 3 short blasts and then a long blast, or a long blast and then 9 short blasts and then a long blast, or a long blast and then 3 short blasts and 9 long blasts and then a long blast. So there's always, it's always bookended by the long blast with the short blasts in the middle. So the long blast again at the beginning can represent our long-term goals. The short blasts represent the small steps that we're going to use to get there. And then the long blast again represents that's how we will actually finally reach those goals that we've set for ourselves. And just to close, I put as the last source here another verse in the Torah, which says that in the 7th month, on the 1st of the month, there shall be a rest day for you, a remembrance with shofar sounds. And if you compare that to the first verse, which it's 2 different places in the Torah where it talks about Rosh Hashanah. So the first verse says, it shall be a day of shofar sounding for you. And the last one says it should be a remembrance with shofar sounds. And the message, according to one commentary, the Ksav Sofer, is that the sounding of the shofar is not just for that one day. There's a commandment for that day. That's what's represented in the first blessing, in the first verse. But then it's something that we're supposed to hold with us as a remembrance that's supposed to last with us throughout the year if we can. Yes?
I have a question about it being the 7th month.
Okay, so you missed, Shari. I said I'm not going to talk about it now. I actually said I'm not going to explain it now. But in the Torah in general, the 1st month is Nisan,
right.
And the last, that's where we count the holidays from.
That makes it 6 months.
Nisan,
April, May, June, July, August, September.
Well, you're counting English months. You have to count Hebrew months. Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei. 7.
Oh, right. Tishrei. I forgot about Tishrei.
All right. Thank you all for coming.